Good afternoon, everybody. Good evening, good morning, whatever time you're listening. The news is broken. I told you it was coming. I reported back in mid-October that Anthony Davis was going to request a trade from the New Orleans Pelicans. I was in New Orleans a couple months ago on my way to San Antonio, and I ran into this guy, a good friend of mine who I worked with at the Associated Press for a number of years, Brett Martell. And Brett Martell joins us today from New Orleans, where Anthony Davis, the news broke, but Anthony Davis didn't have anything to say about it. So, Brett, why don't you take it from there and tell us what went on at Pelicans practice today on Monday, January 28th.
Yeah, well, the media was allowed onto the practice court right after practice ended, and I could see through a kind of a glass window into the weight room that Anthony was present and in Pelicans gear and doing some work on his own. So we went ahead and just asked the team, you know, if he doesn't want to talk, we're going to have to say that, you know, he declined to speak with us. And so they said, let us check. And they checked, and he said he wouldn't be talking until Wednesday at the earliest. So he's not ready to speak publicly about the decision that his agent announced today. And so far, the only people in the franchise we've heard from are Coach Alvin Gentry and veteran guard Jrue Holiday.
And Jrue Holiday has seen a lot, and Alvin Gentry has seen a lot. So why don't you take us through first what Alvin said, because Alvin was pretty much put on the spot, I imagine, and then tell us what Jrue Holiday had to say, because Drew's been through a lot ever since he got drafted with and played with the Philadelphia 76ers.
Well, Alvin declined to go negative. He said that he understands that stuff happens in the NBA and you have to deal with what you have. And so he's dealing with it the best he can. He said that he thinks AD is a professional guy who, if not traded, will continue to play his best as long as he's under contract in New Orleans. And the Pelicans are hoping that his sprained left index finger will be healthy enough soon that he can come back and that they can try to make a playoff run. You know, they've been beset by injuries all season long, and Gentry even said that, you know, coming into the season, they were excited about the team that they had, and that when everyone's been healthy, they're 7-3, which would be a 700 winning percentage. But, teams deal with injuries all the time. And so, you know, whether you can blame injuries exclusively for that or whether you can look at the roster and say there's a lack of depth is just another debate entirely.
Right. And the Pelicans have lost three in a row to drop to 22-28, and they're sitting in the bottom of the Western Conference race. So we've gone over this this matter a number of times with a number of guests, Brett, and we've always been saying it's just not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. So looking forward to Wednesday night, you think Anthony Davis is still with the team, or do you think this thing moves and changes in terms of which teams will be in the mix and which will be find themselves out of the race between now and the February 7th NBA trading deadline?
Well, it's, I think, a very complicated scenario because there's only a certain number of teams. I mean, as Davis has indicated, he wants to go to a contender, and there are only a certain number of contenders, if you will, that have the requisite assets to do a fair trade for Anthony Davis. And, you know, while you know, he may want to go to the Lakers and play with LeBron James, it's highly debatable whether the Lakers have the assets in return. And, you know, you'd think you'd want those assets to be, you know, in the form of lottery draft picks as well as young emerging star players. So who has the most of that handy? Well, you know, the Celtics have multiple draft picks, including of teams that are not doing well. So those would be likely lottery picks. They also have a lot of good young players, but they can't do that trade, as everyone knows, until the summer. So I think what happens right now is that the Pelicans listen to all the offers, with the rest of the league knowing that they're going to have to offer something comparable to what the Celtics will be able to eventually offer. Otherwise, the Pelicans are going to wait and see if they can drive up the market price for Davis over the summer.
Yeah, and there's a lot of banter around the NBA. Kevin Durant out in L.A. is saying, you know, why not do what you want? And players get a lot of blowback from the public for trying to join up with better teams. And Kevin Durant is certainly exhibit A in that, because when he left Oklahoma City and went to Golden State, he got a lot of blowback. But he's definitely had a considerable amount of success since then with the Golden State Warriors. In your opinion, Brett, is Anthony Davis crossing a line here by having Rich Paul put out a trade request at a time when he still has not only this year but next year remaining on his contract, plus a player option for the year after that?
Well, I suppose there's two ways to look at it. You could think of it as disloyal and somewhat embarrassing to the team and a lack of accountability on AD's part, because he did agree to the contract under which he's currently playing. And AD was obviously very active in trying to have a team built around him in New Orleans, only to say now that it's not working. He wants out, and too bad to the guys like Jrue Holiday, who did commit to a long-term deal in New Orleans. DeMarcus Cousins obviously didn't, so he's in a good position as well. But on the other hand, you know, you could say that, well, if the Pelicans were thinking about mortgaging the future to try to make Pelicans more competitive around AD right now, now they have the opportunity to rethink that and think more about the long term, because Davis is essentially not leaving them to wonder, you know, with a lack of certainty which way they should go.
Yeah, and I've been saying for a long time that if the trade gets done by February 7th, the Lakers have the advantage. And a lot of the Laker beat writers are out there reporting today that, if the Lakers want to get involved, the offer is going to have to start with Kuzma, Ball, and Zubac, those three young guys. And then you're going to have to put somebody else in there who makes some money in order to make the money work. And one of those guys would be Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, who's making $12 million, but also has a trade veto. Interestingly, he is also represented by Rich Paul and Clutch Sports. And then on top of that, you're going to have to put in draft picks if you're the Lakers, and you're not going to want to put in, or if you're the Pelicans, you're not going to want short-term draft picks for 5-6 years down the road when LeBron James's contract has expired and the Lakers look like a completely different team. So, Brett, you've seen a ton of Pelicans games. You think an offer? I'll give you four names: Kuzma, Ingram, Caldwell, Pope, and Ball. I'll give you five because I'll throw in Zubac as well. All five of those guys. Let's assume the four of them and a couple picks go in the trade. Yeah, you think that's enough for the Lakers to outbid Danny Ainge? Because Danny Ainge does have four first-round picks in the 2019 draft this coming June.
Well, you know, it's a tough call because you'd almost think that the Pelicans, in order to restore credibility with the public, especially the local public in New Orleans, they don't want to end up in a situation like they were with Chris Paul, where they got a handful of players back from the Clippers, none of whom were too excited to be in New Orleans, didn't really pan out, particularly Eric Gordon, and it set the franchise back for several years. You'd almost want to look at, you know, young players who are going to be getting their, they're not seeing a shrinking window of time to compete for a championship. They're getting their, you know, first opportunities to make a name for themselves in New Orleans. I think that might be the more, proactive approach for the Pelicans at this point. And the other thing complicating matters is, okay, Dell Demps has been here since the 2010-11 season. And, the loss of Anthony Davis is kind of on him. So do you want the current, you know, GM and coach regime shaping the future of the franchise, or do you need to change the current GM and coach regime first and then make that deal? And if that's the case, well, then it's summertime.
Right. And if it's summertime, then the Celtics could certainly make the better offer, because in the summer, as you mentioned, Brett, the Celtics can put together a team that includes both Kyrie Irving and Anthony Davis. So when push comes to shove, it's going to be a matter of, does this get done before February 7th, or does this happen over the summer? But let's say, for argument's sake, that it has to be done before the 7th, because, look, Clutch Sports and Dell Demps and Alvin Gentry and the Benson family, these people are going to be doing business together for years and years and years to come. And so you start looking at the Celtics roster and what they would put in. First of all, you got to put in somebody who's making a ton of money to make the trade work, and that player would probably have to be Kyrie Irving. Then you throw in the four first-round picks and then probably take a player like Jaylen Brown, maybe a guy like Marcus Smart. But I think the key to that trade is the four first-round picks. If Danny Ainge loads up the wheelbarrow and says, here, take them all, take all four, and take Kyrie and find a more desirable destination for Kyrie, because he certainly doesn't want to play in New Orleans. That's where you could get a three-team trade going that could involve the New York Knicks. With all that being said, where does the Benson family kind of fit into this whole equation? The Benson family, of course, owns the Saints, and unfortunately, the Saints didn't have things go their way in the NFC title game. But in terms of the Pelicans and what the Benson family has done for that franchise, how do you see them responding to today's news?
Well, it's tricky because this is Gail Benson's first year as the sole owner of the team since her husband Tom died in March. And, you know, she had indicated to several journalists, including me, that or it was apparent to me that she was mentally prepared for AD's departure at some point, because she had said that, you know, she would be disappointed if Anthony left, but she doesn't want anybody to remain in New Orleans if they really don't want to be here. So that was the first indication I really got that from ownership on down, they were certainly prepared to trade him if he made it clear to them that he just didn't feel like it was working out here and he wasn't going to be happy. The good news, unlike the Chris Paul situation when ownership was really shaky and in doubt, the good news here is that the Pelicans have very strong ownership, and so they'll be able to maybe exert a little more leverage over this situation and try to make sure they get the best deal. And if that means waiting until the summertime, then that's what it means.
And I'm curious, what was the context in which Gail Benson said she was mentally prepared for AD's departure?
Well, she didn't say she was mentally prepared for her departure. That was, I guess, my inference. But what mm-hmm. she said specifically was, and this was a very casual conversation over lunch, she had invited a handful of media who covered the Saints and Pelicans to lunch at Antoine's restaurant, which is just, you know, one of the oldest restaurants in the country, in the French Quarter, actually. And she had just said that she loves Anthony, would be really disappointed if he left, but doesn't want anybody here if they don't want to be here. And so that was an indication to me that she'd been either preparing herself mentally or the front office had been preparing her for the distinct possibility of Anthony, you know, demanding a trade as he has done.
Yeah, and so let's say the Pelicans can pull off something by the 7th and get back a bushel full of draft picks and a bunch of serviceable players. Does that keep Alvin Gentry employed, and does that keep Dell Demps employed, or do you think by the end of the season Gail Benson will clean house and start over in the front office and on the coaching staff?
That's another tough call because, it appears that the front office and the ownership has really been behind Dell and Alvin, that they have a very healthy kind of professional relationship and that they really like Alvin Gentry personally as well. But again, there's an issue. There comes a point where you have to, you know, you have to have a little bit more credibility with the fan base. And if there's a strong feeling that the fan base is so fed up with the current GM and coach regime that they just can't sell tickets and suites, then I think they're going to have to make some kind of move there. And so, like I said,
indeed.
You know, Demps has been – go ahead.
No, you continue, Brett.
Oh, and, you know, Gentry is in his fourth season, and Demps has been here since the 10-11 season and was here when they had to deal with Chris Paul. So this is the second time he's been through this. But, you know, nobody felt it was Demps' fault the first time when Paul left because it was an unfavorable ownership situation. And Paul had been here a long time and had been dissatisfied before Demps arrived. But this is all on Dell's watch. And so, you know, I mean, how do you sell that to your fan base?
Well, you have to sell it to your fan base as, look what Dell got back in this trade. And I think that's where we got to see where the bidding goes and who comes in as the winner and when. And there's a lot of time between now and the February 7th trade deadline. It may seem like it's right around the corner, but there's 3 days left in January and then 7 days or 6.5 days. So you're talking about 9 days for the Pelicans to start sorting through offers. And anybody with guys to trade is gonna see what the Pelicans want and try to add on. There's a lot of talk that the Knicks are in this mix, but talking to some people I know at the Knicks the other night when they played out in Brooklyn, they're adamant that they're not going to trade future first round picks, just adamant, and under any circumstances. And, you know, if they're not going to trade first round picks, they're not going to get a player like AD. But with Clutch Sports coming out with Rich Paul telling Woj what he told him this morning, I would think the Knicks would have to put just about anybody out there, including Kristaps Porzingis and including future first round picks, because the Knicks are trying to attract a max free agent next summer. You got to have three good players, and the Knicks right now have one in Porzingis. But if they could flip Porzingis, maybe a guy like Knox and a future first, you got to make the money work. So you would have to probably put a guy like Courtney Lee in there. Do you see AD as being a fit in New York, or you think he's more of a Boston LA guy?
Well, he, you know, is a very personable and easygoing sort of guy. I mean, he grew up in Chicago. I think he'd be, and of course he played for Kentucky as a 19-year-old, won a national championship with them, and no college team has more intense media coverage than that. Although the argument could be made that Cal is able to protect Kentucky players in a way that pro teams don't generally do. I mean, that, you know, pro players are trying to get out there and maximize their exposure and endorsements and so forth. So, I think he would be fine in New York, but he's not really, he's never been, I would say, in New Orleans, a strong personality in terms of like a leadership type player. He almost seems more comfortable being part of a tandem where, you know, he's got another guy on the team that can speak for the team, can speak to the team, and can also just create space for him to operate, you know, as both an, you know, as an individual and as a player on the floor. So if the Knicks are lacking that, it could make him, you know, less inclined to stay there and sign an extension and so forth.
I can't disagree with any of that. And Brett, you've been covering a lot of sports in New Orleans for a long time, and you've been through Hurricane Katrina. You've been through before the Pelicans were the Pelicans, they were the Hornets. You and I spent some time down there together when I was with ESPN, and you took me around and showed me some of the damage post Katrina. But the guy I want to ask you about, this one comes a little bit out of left field, is Ben Simmons. Because you covered Ben Simmons at LSU, and Ben is now on a Philadelphia 76ers team that's having its own set of internal issues. And they're trying to trade Markel Fultz. They're still trying to assimilate Jimmy Butler. And you know, Joel Embiid is going to be an all-star. And by the way, folks, look forward to Joel Embiid and Russell Westbrook having a fight in the all-star game. Everybody can write about that. In covering Ben Simmons, what did you learn about the kid that our listeners would be interested to know? Something that maybe a tale from back in the day when he was at LSU that hasn't been told or hasn't been told in a while.
Well, just that, you know, his teammates, while they respected his talent, didn't really relate to him very well at the college level, that he felt he immediately soured on the experience at LSU, and it almost seemed like the feeling was mutual there, but you know, that's not the pros. And he, you know, I know he went to high school at a private school in Florida, but he had grown up in Australia, just in kind of a different culture with a different mindset. And I don't think he was quite prepared to, he kind of felt a little exploited, I guess, by the college system here. Mm-hmm. Was generally unhappy, felt like all the pressure was on him, and he was looking at it as a developmental opportunity for himself. And so he, I remember covering a game between LSU and Oklahoma where Buddy Hield was, you know, took over the game at the end and made all the big shots, and Ben Simmons disappeared because Ben's game wasn't dynamic enough at the time for him to also take over the game. You know, he wasn't able to make the 3-point shots and kind of, you know, have a all court presence that could tip the balance. And he got a lot of heat for that and was generally unhappy to the point where I don't know if he would even want to have anything to do with playing in Louisiana ever again, whether it's professionally or whatever. You know, I think that would be not an ideal situation for him.
Well, the Sixers have been mentioned as a distant fourth potential destination for Anthony Davis should a trade be made. And if that trade was to be made, then I imagine Fultz would go down to New Orleans. But if not, then Simmons might be the guy. Someone's just got to teach Ben how to bend his knees when he shoots a free throw, and he'll get up in the 80% mark. He's a terrific player. He's a terrific player. The guys who defend him play 8 feet off of him, and he still gets to the rim and gets around him, and he can either score at the rim or create for his teammates. And just a terrific player, but not a good foul shooter. And he's got a problem that's fixable. Ben, if you're listening, bend your knees. Right now, Brett, I have to put in a plug. This show lives on GetMoreSports.com, but the guys paying the bills are one of the top sports books in the world, BetDSI.com, out of San Jose, Costa Rica. And if you go to BetDSI.com and you use bonus code BBALL1000, BBALL1000, they'll give you a matching bonus up to $1,000 US. If you're listening overseas, you got to go to BetDSI.eu, and same thing. Put in whatever the local currency equivalent is of 1,000 U.S. dollars, and they'll match it. Then you'll have $2,000. You can go out and have some fun making some bets. And as I look at the board right now, Brett, the Golden State Warriors still prohibitive favorites to win the Western Conference at -300, which means you got to bet $300 to win $100. But then you start going down the list, and you see the Rockets are at 14-1, and they got Chris Paul back. The Thunder have dipped quite a bit in the last few days to 18-1. Your team, the Pelicans, is at 250-1. Utah is at 45-1, and Denver is at 30-1. You've seen a lot of Western Conference basketball this season. Who would you say people are sleeping on?
Well, it's hard for me to envision anybody beyond Golden State or Houston really doing it. But, Oklahoma City, I guess, has the star power, if things go right for them, to make a run. But by things going right, I mean that they're fully healthy and their chemistry is blossoming, and one of the two favorites has an unfortunate injury or some other kind of personnel issue that sort of derails them. So beyond Oklahoma City, yeah, it's tough. It's tough to say.
Golden State. Go ahead, yeah. Denver, because that's a team I promo a lot. I will love watching those guys play. I love Jokic.
Yeah. So you're saying. Who are you saying then? Denver Nuggets.
Well, I don't hate the Denver Nuggets at the odds that they're being listed at. And another team that I don't hate that's sitting in fourth place right now is the Portland Trail Blazers. They're 31-20. Yeah. And, they're 31-20. Four games over. People tend to not pay a whole heck of a lot of attention to the Portland Trail Blazers, same as the Denver Nuggets, because they're not on TV all that much. But who has the ability and the personnel as currently constituted to knock off the Golden State Warriors? You think Portland might be one of the teams? Because Portland right now, the fourth place team in the West, is 150-1 to win the championship.
Yeah, sorry, a little bit of breakup there, so I couldn't understand what you were saying before. Portland recently, of course, defeated defeated New Orleans when Davis was healthy for most of the game, and that was the last game he played, and maybe the last game he ever plays for New Orleans. So, you know, that's a, you know, a team that was disappointed with their first-round exit last year and, you know, made some key personnel changes and could be positioned to go a little farther this year.
You said something interesting there, Brett. Maybe the last game he ever plays for New Orleans. Is that because you think he might be traded by Wednesday, or is that because of the injury that that he's on a 1 to 2 week timetable to come back from?
Well, it's a combination of both of those things. I mean, if, you know, if he is traded this season and, you know, he's not ready to come back and play yet, then that may well have been the last game that he plays here. But it's not necessarily because, you know, I'm expecting anything imminent in the next couple of days.
I see what you mean. I want to turn to football because the Super Bowl is coming up and everybody bets on the Super Bowl. Well, not everybody, because we'll always have Utah, but a lot of people bet on the Super Bowl, and the Saints got killed by one of the most egregious non-calls in NFL history. Have people calmed down about that yet, or there's still steam coming out of everybody's ears at places like Boudreaux's?
Nobody's calmed down. I mean, you know, what's going on here is kind of they're trying to have more of a sense of humor about it, which is kind of the natural response in New Orleans after the initial sting wears off. But, you know, they're looking at throwing, you know, it's carnival season here. I mean, the Mardi Gras parades will crank up next month, but there's always a few early parades around town, especially some satirical ones. So they've been floating out ideas about having a Mardi Gras style parade with the Saints theme and anti-NFL theme to conflict directly with the Super Bowl, so people could come out and celebrate the Saints at a parade instead of watching the Super Bowl. Bars are saying they don't want to show the game, and you know, there's a federal lawsuit going on involving that. All the politicians jumped on the bandwagon and pandered to the constituents by making statements or writing letters to the NFL expressing their displeasure over this whole thing. This is a really good conspiracy theory town. I'm sure you remember from the JFK Oliver Stone movie. And so, you know, with four officials being from Southern California or living in that area and for that game, there's plenty of talk about that. I mean, I could go on and on.
Mm-hmm. That was all over ESPN today, the fact that four of the officials were from Southern Cal. But that was, look, the guy got hammered helmet to helmet, and it was one of the worst blown calls you've ever seen. I mean, I've seen bad calls before, but I've never seen a blown call quite like that one, unless it involved Odell Beckham Jr., who gets pass interfered with on every single out route that he ever goes, and the rest decide to throw a flag about 30% of the time. But that wasn't, you know, those games, that was the Giants and that was the regular season. And this was a game to put the Saints in the Super Bowl, and they got jobbed. And so the Rams are in, and the line has really swung. The Rams opened as favorites, and now the Patriots are 2.5 point favorites. Not a lot of people want to bet against Tom Brady. Assuming that you're not going to be in one of those Mardi Gras parades and ignoring the game, Brett, what's your forecast for the Super Bowl?
That's a tough one because, you know, just having grown up in New England, even as a perfectly nonpartisan and objective journalist, as an adult, I still tend to follow the Patriots every Sunday. You know, a lot of my family still lives there and follows them. And so what I've noticed in a lot of their Super Bowls is that when they're not expected to win, they seem to pull it out. And when they are the favorite, something seems to derail them. So, you know, I mean, those two losses to the Giants would be an example of where everybody was certain the Patriots would win, and they lost both of them. The past two victories are examples of where people were inclined to bet against the Patriots, and they destroyed the Chargers and then, you know, refused to die against the Chiefs until they finally pulled it out there. So it's really, it is always, it seems, as a general rule, perilous to bet against the Patriots, but to just assume they're going to win is another matter entirely.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I will expect this thing to go into the fourth quarter and be competitive and for the game to be a little bit back and forth. And I think the final pass of the game is thrown by Tom Brady. Now, whether that's a completed pass for the win or whether that's an incomplete pass like last year, remains to be seen. But anytime you get a chance to watch Tom Brady in the Super Bowl, and we've had a lot of them over the past decade, you know, it's a game worth watching. So I want to just turn back to the Pelicans for a minute and kind of go back to Drew Holiday, who's having a pretty terrific season. He's averaging 8.1 assists, and he's second on the team in scoring. Not having a great 3-point shooting year, but you said he was the only other player who talked today about AD and the trade request. What did Drew have to say?
Yeah, he was the only player to talk today, actually, and he said some interesting things. You know, Drew was having none of the questions that would have kind of projected negativity about the future or the front office or anything like that. But he did say, if you want to read between the lines, that, you know, he has a really close relationship with Anthony Davis, and that AD's presence in New Orleans was 90% of the reason he signed to come back. And, you know, as I mentioned earlier, I believe, and so it makes you wonder how disillusioned he is. But if he is disillusioned, he wasn't willing to say it. All he was willing to say is that he had been through a similar thing in Philadelphia, where he got traded here in 2013. And right before that trade, he felt like Philly was close to being a really competitive team in the Eastern Conference. Next thing he knows, everybody's gone, including him. And they went into an overhaul, which then led to another overhaul before they finally started to turn it around there 5 years later or so. You know, he kind of deflected most of the other big picture questions by saying that, you know, he knows his job is to just play as hard as he can and roll with the punches and try to win basketball games. And he also kind of echoes something that Gentry said, which was that he doesn't believe that the specter of AD being unhappy or demanding a trade had undermined the performance of the team. He felt like it was more injury related. Just, you know, a rash of injuries, not necessarily all at the same time, but always losing one key guy at different times and making it impossible for the whole team to be together and develop the kind of chemistry they need and master the style of play that they wanted to master in order to win more consistently.
Yeah, and Drew's the only guy who's played in all 50 games. Davis has missed 9. Julius Randle has missed 3, but he's only started 27. Nikola Mirotic has missed 18 games. Etuan Moore has missed 6. Alfred Payton has missed 31. So this team has been whole only, you know, 4 or 5 times all season long. I think the saving grace is if you do bring back a haul in an Anthony Davis trade, the guys you got left over in Holiday, Randall, Mirotic, Moore, and Payton is not a bad team to build around. You put a potential max player next to those guys, and then you give the Pelicans the opportunity to have 4 or 5 picks in the first round, and Gail Benson's going to be pretty happy with what she's putting on the court at the beginning of next season. Would you agree?
Yeah, it could be a competitive team that's not overly reliant on one player, and I think that what they've seen is that they just have, with the current setup, they just have lacked the depth to withstand injuries to key players more than one or two at a time. And so, you know, in the long run, and I'm sure no one in New Orleans would want to hear that, but in the long run, dealing AD for greater depth and some kind of trade that could promote more continuity on the roster might actually yield a more competitive product.
I can't disagree with you. It's just a matter of timing. We got to start to wrap, Brett. So I'm going to put in one more plug. This show lives on getmoresports.com, as I mentioned before. But if you go to betdsi.com in the United States or betdsi.eu overseas, and you use bonus code BBALL1000, they'll match your first $1,000 that you deposit with an extra $1,000. And then you got $2,000 to go out and have some fun with. And, you know, sports gambling is not illegal in the United States anymore. That law was thrown out on May 14th by the Supreme Court. It's legal now in 8 states and the District of Columbia, and there's 20 states that have sports gambling laws pending in front of their state legislatures. So look, it's a Main Street activity now, and it's going to be even more mainstream than it is during March Madness or during Super Bowl Sunday when everybody likes to have their boxes. So with that, Brett, one question, and I'm going to put you on the spot. What's the best restaurant in New Orleans?
Yeah, that is putting me on the spot because I don't know if I could choose one, but I know that the surest way to not be disappointed would be probably to go to Commander's Palace, just because it seems to have a really good mix of like impeccable service, beautiful environment in which to eat, and you know, they have a menu that is diverse enough that it can give you a taste of classic New Orleans dishes, but also some kind of, you know, modern or cutting edge, you know, culinary twists. So, you know, they owe me for that one.
Yeah, I'll come down and join you.
I'll be looking for a free bread pudding souffle.
He's Brett Martell from the Associated Press. He's been covering sports out of New Orleans from LSU to the Saints, to the Pelicans, before that, the Hornets for a long time. We got a lot of stories we could tell that don't belong on the air, but I'll tell you this, Brett won the wife lottery and Brett won the daughter lottery, and hopefully he recently won the dog lottery because his daughter got a puppy for her birthday. So, Brett, I want to thank you for joining me on the show and say hello to all our mutual friends at the Associated Press. And again, thanks for having me on, or thanks for joining me on the show. It was good to see you a couple months ago down in New Orleans, and let's see what kind of a team you got left to cover in February. Or back.
Okay,
February,
man.
So.
Yeah.
All right.
Always good catching up with you too.
Okay. Thanks, Brett. And with that, we're going to close the show. Three words we always use: over and out.